back, everybody, to another episode of Bob in the Bloom, episode 105. Continuing our positional previews for the 2024 fantasy baseball season. Bats are done. We head to the mound. Starting pitcher preview episode one. Similar to the outfield, we'll try to get through 20-ish, maybe 30 at the most pitchers today. It'll be three parts total, wrapping up next Tuesday for you. So we'll get through all 100, just like we did in the outfield. Get you ready to rock and roll. But before all that, you can find me on Twitter at BDEntrick, podcast at Bubble Bloom Pod, and my co-host, as always, on the Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how are we doing, my friend?
Busy, busy. Very busy. And it's only February 6th. So
yes, sir.
Doing good. The new Baseball HQ site launched over the weekend.
And slick.
I'm biased, but yeah. Bubba on the accesses articles on the phone, and it looks, I think, so much better. Much needed upgrade. So that's been that. And then getting our auction listener league set up and running. It's pretty cool to actually see these filling up on the NFBC site, which we'll talk about in just a sec. But yeah, getting those filled and trying to figure out how to do an auction the next few weeks. So
yep. We'll get those locked down. Ryan said everyone that's in the leagues, they've been designated to their leagues. There's four leagues. We might need about four more players at this moment. We might have a waiting list if you're interested. So come hop in. Just because certain people have realized they are in states that do not allow the NFBC. So we've run into that conundrum. But otherwise, we're pretty much full. But we do have, right now, I think three or four openings. So if you guys still want to sign up, DM us. Let us know. We'll get you in there. It's going to be awesome. $50 entry, 15-team auction formats, strictly the same roto formats the NFBC has always done, just for our league, cheaper price point, have a little fun, overall title.
Yep.
Good stuff.
And somewhat, definitely are bad for not communicating the state issue. It's like Ohio, Arizona, Washington State are the big ones. So we've had a few hiccups that way. Trying to see if we can, I don't know how much to share on the air, but if somebody were perhaps sightseeing, crossing state lines into a legal state and maybe just tried to register there. Maybe it works. I don't know. I've never tried it.
Like in the DFS world, it works. So maybe? I don't know. Something to think about.
Haven't tried it myself, but it may be worth a shot.
Might be worth a shot. See if you can make it work. Who knows? But those will be rock and rolling. First draft is on the 19th. So we're going to be going crazy. And we'll see where it goes. Ryan's in two. I'm in two. We'll have an overall. It's going to be fun. Lots of fun.
And again, shout out to the NFBC for hooking us up and organizing this. It's all very smooth and it's going to be awesome. But we'll stop talking about it for the people who are not interested, and because we do have a ton of pitchers and a ton of listener questions to get to. So
yeah, you guys are crushing the listener questions, and we've said it forever, and I'll repeat this one all the time. We'll do whole shows on listener questions alone if you'd like. So, keep them coming. This is – you guys don't need to hear us just go player by player all the time. Like, I know that's what some people love, but keep those listener questions because you are the reason we like to do this show. Yep. So, Ryan, why don't you talk about – you pulled the board up for SP Part 1. What are we looking at here?
SP Part 1. So, I had to do a little rejiggering of the board here. Added a new column, fourth column. Hope things aren't too busy for our YouTube and – live stream crowd, but
they are, blame me. That was my idea. Hey,
it's a good idea. The column we added is innings pitched, in addition to ERA, WHIP, and strikeouts, color coded for the best categories and color coded against the top 90 starting pitchers. So that's why you see a lot of green, obviously, for this ADP of top 30. And this ADP is the last 16 drafts from the NFBC. Just kind of picked a day where you have roughly 15 of the last drafts. So this is pretty fresh stuff. Projections courtesy of ATC, which is available on Fangraphs. And I think that's it. Like, I do want to, like, I guess just real quick. I'm already going. I already said we have a lot to cover and go off on tangents. I don't use projections as much on the pitcher side as I do the hitter side. And I think you'll see that come out tonight in the next few shows in our analysis on just how we evaluate pitchers. I just think it's so hard to nail down ERA and WHIP specifically. Like, strikeouts are pretty stable year to year. And then innings pitched, like, man, we don't know which of these pitchers are going to get hurt, which are not. Like, Sandy Alcantara this time last year was the Iron Man. And now look at him. There are some outlier cases, which, you know, your boy Glass now that we'll talk about. But where you can maybe tweak down some innings pitch totals. But I think it's just a lot more kind of art and feel to the pitching side in terms of evaluating pitchers. They can change a lot quicker with pitch mix changes, velocity, and that sort of thing. So nothing against the projection systems out there. I just think pitchers are so much more volatile from a skills perspective and volatile from an injury perspective, and that pretty much any pitcher can get injured at any time, even the ones who we think are, quote unquote, the most stable. So it's my little offshoot there.
Well, 100%. Like, we even talked about it with hitters, with batting average, like just ratios in general. They're just hard to make a proper projection on. Strikeouts, if you can get a rough idea on innings pitch, which we talk about plate appearances for hitters, you got your chances there. Injuries will happen much more on pitchers, it feels like, than hitters. So you're right there. But at least some guys we know have been durable in the past, so you're not as surprised. Like when, you know, Zach Wheeler's predicted for 187. Okay, I can believe that. That kind of makes sense type stuff. Now, if he gets hurt, so be it. But those are kind of things you can see. And if you just, you know, project things out, we rock and roll. So let's start at the top. ADP is 6. Starting pitcher 1. Not sure there's many complaints here. Spencer Strider. Dude was lights out last year. Even though he struggled towards the end of the final, ERA was 3.86. But even all his, like, xFIP, Sierra's rated out beautifully. And the dude struck out 281 batters in 186 innings pitched, with a near 30% K to walk. The dude was insane. So I don't have a whole lot else to say about him. What do you got on Spencer Strider?
No, clear number one pitcher. The only question you're going to ask yourself is if you have, like, the 5th pick in your draft, or, you know, comparing Strider to the, you know, the 5 category bats that we've been talking about the last few weeks, which is probably a topic for another episode. But yeah, Strider, like, I got nothing to add here. Like, By far, the number one pitcher was with pretty much zero concerns given the innings that Strider pitched last year. That was kind of the last somewhat of a question mark for me, was the workload, the volume, that sort of thing. And he answered past that with flying colors. So, yeah, Strider number one.
Yep, number one with a bullet. Gerrit Cole, AL Cy Young, ADP of 12 right now. He's coming in off of 209 innings pitched, back-to-back seasons of 200-plus. If you want to really go back, 5 of the last 6 seasons, not counting 2020, of 20 plus or 200 plus, that's pretty darn good. Ratios elite. We did see a little drop in strikeouts, but gonna be 33 if you want to take that into any consideration. But what's your thoughts on Cole? Because I know we talked about him a lot in our top 20 SP ranking show. Where are you standing on him now?
I'm still, he's my number 2 starting pitcher, but like, there are holes, man, or not holes, but like, there are signs of some like cracks starting to come in. You just mentioned the age, pretty big time, or slight drops, I guess, and strikeout rate went down by 5 points. The velocity was down a full tick for Cole. The whiffs were way down for Gerrit Cole, and that was all kind of hidden by, I think, some pretty fortunate BABIP and home run luck, especially in Yankee Stadium. So yes, I don't know if this is peak Gerrit Cole anymore, but I also don't think he needs to be peak Gerrit Cole to return late first round value, just because of the volume, the strikeouts that you're going to get, presumably the wins, although the Yankees, half their lineup isn't all that great. He's still my number 2 pitcher, but with some trepidation compared to this next tier. And it's just interesting ADP wise, Cole is like kind of in a tier by himself behind Strider, but above these next maybe 5 or 6, maybe 7 guys that I think are all very close to each other in the third tier here.
And it's funny you mentioned that, because yeah, Cole's got the ADP at 12. The next 6 guys we talk about, 24 through 35. Like, it's and we've talked about it on other shows. It's like, you know, roster construction, and the reason why we don't draft players so and so in round 3, it's because a lot of pitchers are going in round 3, and that's just kind of where you start to see the yellow brick road, and it shows right here. Heck, if you want to even go even deeper, 24 through 41 are the next 7 pitchers. Like, so pretty much round 2.5 to almost the end of round 3, you're going pitcher heavy in those regards. So it is kind of interesting to see Cole separate so much, because I've heard other people discuss it, that they have similar thoughts to how we do about Cole, of you still think he's very good. He's still one of the elite pitchers. Like, you still draft him if you feel like you want that kind of stable guy, but just you don't feel the air of full confidence like you felt in years past with Gerrit Cole, especially with some of these other guys we're going to talk about, because, like, we're going to talk, you know, Wheeler, Gossman, Castillo, Garby, Pablo, like all these dudes where you could see them all performing to Cole levels coming up here. And that's kind of why I think we're both of us stand on why we probably pass on Cole more often than not, but not because he's going to be bad, but more just we're talking equivalencies. These guys are pretty similar to him.
That's what I was just going to ask you. Like, is Cole worth this 12 pick, which in a 12 teamer, that's a full round. Is he worth that full round bump over these next guys?
Not a chance for me.
I don't think so. I think the opportunity cost of not taking some of the bats that are available around Gerrit Cole, like, I'd much rather take a Jose Ramirez in Cole's spot. Just throwing out, you know, Judge Soto, name your bat who you're high on in the 10 to 15 ADP. I think I'd much rather take one of those guys and then dip down to this next tier. I just don't think the separation between Cole and Wheeler, Burns, Gossman, Castillo, whatever that order is worth the pick. So I don't think, even though Cole, it's weird, even though Cole, and this is why rankings are rankings, it's like, and rankings are different than what you're going to do on draft day sometimes. Because, like, yes, Cole's my number two pitcher, but it's tough for me to see a scenario where I take him, given where the market's at with some of these other guys.
The way I look at it, in a 12, not a chance, just because, heck, if you follow this ADP, and obviously this is 15 team DC, so it's different. I haven't even looked at the 12s yet, because I haven't gotten there in my prep yet, to, like, drafting there. But you can almost get two of these guys in the next two rounds or later. Like, you could still get some elite pitching by waiting. And a 15 is where Cole becomes interesting. Because if you're at the back end of round one, by the time you get a chance to draft a lot of these guys again, they're almost all gone.
That's
where Cole gets interesting.
Really good point. So we're doing Katie Estraw, which, for those unaware, is Kentucky Derby style. Basically, you're picking your draft slot. And it looks like for me, for Labor, which is that live stream's coming up 2 weeks from tonight, which will be live streamed on the Bubba and the Bloom podcast. And probably my favorite episode of the year.
I love it because I just sit back and drink. And
you just, yeah, and everything. You just, well, and you blast my, honestly, very good picks.
You did win last year.
we'll get to that. But it looks like I'm ending up with like the 10th or 12th spot in a 15 teamer. And this is exactly what you just said. I'm not going to be able to get, most likely, maybe Labor's a little bit different and pitching isn't pushed up as much. I may not even get the chance to draft anybody from this next tier of starting pitchers. So it's a decision I may have to make in the late first round of a 15 teamer is do I take Gerrit Cole maybe and pass on a really good bat, because this next group is so clumped up together from picks 25 to 30 or 24 to 35.
And the last thing I'll mention, because we spent a lot of time on the second overall pitcher here, but the reason I say
it's draft strategy stuff, I think.
Well, the reason I say the 15 team, just for anybody that hasn't listened to us talk before, is you want so much more of a floor in a 15. So as much as we might critique Cole as not being this guy that's different than these other pitchers coming up in this clump, he still has an amazing floor, like a very good floor where, like we talked about Burns last year, was he as elite as people thought? No, but did he kill your team? Not at all. So, and that's where Cole, I think, comes into play, like, or even Strider. Like, Strider, all the strikeouts, but he still had like a 3.7 ERA. People like look at that and go, number one pick, but he did zero damage to your team. So stuff like that with Cole, his floor is just so good, and you just run with it in a 15. All right, SP3. I know we're both fans of this guy. Zach Wheeler, ADP at 24 right now, coming off 192 innings pitched through 213 in 2021. 3.61 ERA is actually the highest ERA he's had since 2019. Strikeouts are there yet again for Wheeler. He's just a beast, a workhorse. And don't forget, 2022, he had 153 innings, but that's because he started the year late with that kind of shoulder injury that scared a lot of people. Once he came back there, he was, you know, Wheeler again. So in reality, yes. Did he have the injury? Yes. But he started the season. Once he started the season pitching, he was fine. So I love Wheeler. He's like, I think we said on the top 20 show, it's like Cole's 2A, Wheeler's 2B type thing. Like, you could easily switch the two. And this is why we kind of pass on Cole in 12s.
Wheeler is like I think a really good blend of for as much as bankable volume, as much as that exists in the starting pitcher, you've got that. But you've also, I think, still got, even though Wheeler's a little bit older, I think you've got even some higher strikeout upside from Zach Wheeler. The swinging strike rate went up 2 full points from 11%, 11.5%, which is roughly league average, up to 13.5%, which is really, really good. And there was a little bit of a pitch mix change behind that. Zach Wheeler threw a new sweeper 12% of the time last year, missed bats at a 17% clip. So you have a little bit of a pitch mix change with a major uptick in whiffs. That wasn't totally, like, the strikeout rate seems stable, 29, 27, 27% the last three seasons. That's really good. I think this could get up to like 30%. And if that's the case with Zach Wheeler's volume, you could be looking at something well north of 200 Ks. So Zach Wheeler is a fine choice in this range. I did I took Kevin Gausman over Zach Wheeler in a draft champions. So it, again, it's interesting when you are forced to click the button. I did not go with Wheeler as SP3. I went with Gausman, but certainly case can be made for either one. And I'll probably make the case for Gausman here in just a sec.
Yes, I know you will. That's your guy. So I actually would not expect you to do anything differently. That's kind of what it comes down to when these guys are very similar. And I won't say all the Gausman stuff here. We'll wait for Gausman in a minute, but they're both pretty similar, except one big difference to me. And Gausman might have the edge in that regard. Corbin Burns, ADP of 25, going right after Zach Wheeler this past year, 3.39 ERA, 193 innings. So he got you the innings, ERA, like three straight years in the twos. So that was a big difference. And the strikeouts did drop a bit. All in all, though, if you looked like deep into Burns, he finished the year strong after a hiccup. Things were good. He's now in Baltimore. Take that for what you will. Some people take it a lot because he's going in the first rounds of drafts lately, if you look around on Twitter. He's good. I'm not against Burns. I've actually taken him in a couple drafts since our top 20, just based on how things kind of fell in the draft room. But he's not a target of mine. I'll say that much.
I could see Burns going up to the Cole range post-trade. Yeah. I mean, and we won't spend too much time. I mean, every podcast you probably listen to has covered the Burns trade. We talked about it a little bit last week. The one thing I will add is, like, I don't know if I have given Corbin Burns enough credit for that second half turnaround that you mentioned, Bubba. Eric Simulski, our buddy and listener to the show, put out an article on Roto-World, kind of looking into that second half a little bit more for Corbin Burns. And there was some definite, not like pitch mix change stuff, but pitch shape and pitch movement changes from first to second half that really helped drive Corbin Burns's rebound. So certainly get the case for Burns. Probably still going Wheeler Gausman over him, but I'm not as down as I thought I was on Burns back when we did our top 20, when I had Burns like 6 or 7, but still probably not ending up with him. But I certainly understand the case. And if you want to make that case for volume and strikeouts with Cole, it's a little bit hypocritical if I don't at least give Burns a shout out for that same skill.
Yeah, he brings a really solid floor, I'll say that much. And maybe he finds the ceiling again. If he finds that, then yeah, he's probably deserves to be up in the Cole range. But I guess I'm still hesitant, and maybe it's a fault of mine, but it's tough when you have Wheeler going in front of him. And then this guy, Kevin Gausman, ADP of 27 right now. Dude threw 185 innings last year. It's three straight, like basically 175 plus, which you give me a 175 plus, you're in a elevated tier for me. It's the way pitchers pitch these days. ERA of 3.16. We've talked about how elite his ratios have been. Strikeouts were outstanding this past year. 24% K to walk. I won't say too much more because this is your boy, but I will say the reason I could see taking Gausman over Wheeler, I think Wheeler is just, I feel more confident in just a steady return with Wheeler, because Gausman, I guess in the back of my brain, I always think the splitter is going to fall off someday, and that just scares me. But the difference between the two, if you want to take Gausman, he will strike out more guys than Zach Wheeler. So that is a big plus. The floor is yours now for Kevin Gausman.
Yeah, no, dude, 227, 205, and 237 strikeouts. Yeah. Over the last three seasons, like, pretty that's good. Just that's crazy. At 12 wins, come on, Blue Jays. 12 wins,
they just sucked overall last year. It was like,
come on, man,
I hate to shill for my stuff. Just go listen to the preview I did with Arico. That team just underperformed on every aspect of baseball,
especially when Gausman was pitching. Yep. Baseball Forecaster made a really good point that the second half skills for Gausman did decline. The strikeout rate went up from 6% to 9%. or sorry, the walk rate went up from 6% to 9%. Strikeout rate down from 33 to 29. Did leave, and I'm kind of pulling from the forecaster here, left a start in July with left side discomfort. Never missed like a ton of time. Didn't go on the IL for it. We just kind of wondered if that, I don't know, made Gausman a little bit off down in the second half. I think this is, yeah, like he is my number three starting pitcher ahead of Wheeler, ahead of Burns. Again, certainly get the case for those other guys. But if those damn Blue Jays finally score some runs for him, this could be like an 18-win guy, 220, 230 strikeouts, like just monster numbers.
Yeah, Joe Rico's in the chat saying the wins won't come. Offseason has been dog s, and but just
keep,
remember,
keep Gossman, it clean, Arico.
But Gossman's better than anyone not named Strider.
There we go, Arico with a take up there for the
Jays takes
for the live stream crowd. So yeah, Gossman that. Over anyone not named Strider. Interesting.
Beautiful. SP6 coming off the board with an ADP of 29. Remember, these guys are all clumped together, like we said, and it's checking out here. That's Luis Castillo. And 197 innings last year, most in his career, 3.34 ERA. The strikeouts were outstanding. Once again, his first year since 2020, short in 2020. So first full season with a K to walk over 20%. My biggest concern, Ryan, is, and I think it's just the ballpark and the team aspect made him change things. Used to be a very, very heavy ground ball pitcher. This past year, his ground ball dropped to 39%, and his fly balls went to over 42.4%. Which is just gigantic. They all basically flipped. They're 47 and 33 and a half the year before. They basically flipped this past season because I think he's using the ballpark and the defense around him and maybe pitching for more strikeouts in that regard. Maybe that's why the ratios were a little higher, at least ERA, the whips were down, which is what you want to see, but still a very, very good pitcher. I just, any guy gets heavy fly ball can always run into some trouble if things don't go the right way.
So my pushback on that is, yes, so I agree. He did go from ground ball to fly ball. That is pretty much by design. The pitch mix has completely changed for Luis Castillo, where he has gone from sinker changeup to basically four-seam slider. And what that has done for Luis Castillo is it's curbed his walk rate. So when Luis Castillo had that extreme ground ball tilt, he was throwing that changeup that people could spit on. You either swing and miss at or you spit on it. The walk rate was pretty elevated for Luis Castillo when he was sinker changeup. And that the walk rate's gone down from basically 9% to 7%. Doesn't sound like a lot, but Luis Castillo's like Achilles heel was his whip. And 108, 110 whip the last two seasons for Luis Castillo since he's gone to this more four-seam slider approach. The last thing I'll add, I put out a tweet this morning about starting pitchers with the highest swinging strike rate on their four seamer, which is very important. It sounds like very niche. It's very important. If you can miss bats with your four seam fastball, you're pretty much golden. Luis Castillo had the highest whiff rate of any starting pitcher on his four seamer. So I think what you're losing in a little bit more home run risk, you're gaining in better control and more strikeouts. And you're also going from that park, Cincinnati to Seattle. I think this like Luis Castillo 2.0 version is freaking awesome. And so Castillo's well deserving of where he's going in drafts. And I'll just tack on the last point I'll make is 187 innings, 150 innings, and 197 the last 3 years. Like, I think he's got it all except for the fly ball tilt that you mentioned.
Yep, and I agree. Like, the strikeouts went up, and that's all I care about in the end. Like, I told a listener that DM'd me the other day that he was comparing pitchers or whatever, and I said, well, the only big things I care about, right? Actually, I wrote it in an article, I think, about that. It's going to come out soon. Like, the reason why, like, I love Jesus Lazardo, we'll talk more about him at a later date and time, but he got the innings for me last year, and he's a strikeout machine. Like, I can work with, and he had decent ratios, but if you can prove you can strike guys out and you can throw innings, I'll work with improvements elsewhere. And you just mentioned that with Luis Castillo. You got innings, strikeouts are improving. We're good. Because you're just one like step away from running real good into a Cy Young type season, which is what I like to see in your fantasy pitchers. All right. We're about to hit into, we had Ryan's Rays last year. Ugh. We're hitting a pocket of...
Which, Which didn't end well, I will, in terms of full Drew Rasmussen and Jeffrey Springs. Could have ended well, but did not.
Started out great. Continue.
Yeah.
Let's hope it doesn't happen here, because these are two of your guys right here. We're going to start with George Kirby, ADP of 34. Kirby threw 190 innings last year, which I did not see coming after 130 the year before. That was quite the jump, and actually about 154 if you count minor league innings. So still a pretty solid jump for Kirby. Ratios are outstanding. We've talked to death about the whip. Which is what he does very well. 20% K to walk, not a heavy strikeout guy, but he doesn't walk anybody. So that's a plus as well. He feels like he's an accumulator like Sandy, but I think he's better. I know you're going to tell me I'm wrong, and I agree with what you're about to say, because there are signs that I like a lot better. Everyone remembers I was not a Sandy guy. I'm interested in George Kirby. I very much am. So what is it you like about George Kirby at ADP 34?
Dude, he's like that band you discovered when no one liked him on the radio or whatever, and then now he's freaking Billboard top 40. I don't even know if that exists. Like, I'm becoming an old now. I don't know.
It does. There's a top, yeah. There's a top 100 now. There. Still good.
I was like George Kirby. Like, this was back in 4K, even before Forecaster season. Like, George, you're right. George Kirby was my guy. George Kirby's like everyone's guy right now. And so like the price, almost everyone you hear, every podcast you hear will be raving about George Kirby. And so the price is just, I think he's fully priced. So you bring up a great point about the floor and the whip and the control and all that. This is the first, when we're looking at the chart, the first neutral number in any of these projections. And that's a white sell for strikeouts. That's 171 strikeouts for George Kirby. That's still pretty good. But when you're having to choose between 170 strikeouts from Kirby and like 220 from Gausman, 220 maybe from Pablo Lopez. I mean, that's 50 Ks is a lot. That's like, I mean, that's almost like a reliever for a full season. I think the market is pricing in an improvement in strikeouts with George Kirby. And that could happen. George Kirby misses a ton of bats with his four-seam fastball. So I mentioned Luis Castillo with the highest. I think Kirby was fourth highest in terms of whiffs on the four seamer. He does not miss bats with any of his secondary pitches, which is why the strikeout rate is so low. Did start throwing a split finger in the middle of the season last year, and the strikeout rate did uptick in the second half for Kirby. I just think the market's like expecting that to continue, and it might. Like, the dude's super young, and you know, but he's fully priced, man. I really liked him when no one else did.
I'd like him about 10 picks later, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
That would be a lot like more.
It's a tough click at 34.
Yeah. It's one of those, if you take him, you need to back it up with like a Peralta later on or something.
Yeah.
Or Snell. Or Singa. Yep. Somebody like that. You have that has to be a part of your game plan. Like, you're drafting Kirby for his floor and his ratio floor. You got to get those strikeouts somewhere else, or you're going to find a massive hole coming your direction. Yeah. Your other guy. Your big, this is your 2024 boy. I'm trying to figure out how to phrase this properly. You're putting a lot
of pressure on our friend Pablo here.
Hey, Pablo got Nick nominated for video of the year.
Pablo is Nick Pollock's boy. He's not mine.
He's yours. I love Nick, but you when you ranked him fifth in your top 20, you got my attention. And I critiqued you then because, well, that's what I do. But the more we've done things, I'm starting to see where you're coming from. The ratios for like the four straight year, sub four ERA, that works. 194 innings after 180 last year. And more importantly, the strikeouts just keep climbing up to 29% K rate, 23.2% K to walk this past year. Why don't you go wax poetic about your boy, Pablo Lopez, and why this ADP of 35 is like he needs to be going earlier in the draft?
I do think he should be going earlier. The market has picked up on him too, though.
Yes, they have. Yes, they
35. Have. Pablo Lopez did not used to be 35.
No.
ADP. He's younger than 35 years old. I don't know. I could go on for too long about Pablo Lopez. I'll keep it short. The skills were absolutely elite last year. Minnesota knows exactly what they're doing with their starting pitchers. We will mention other Minnesota Twins probably tonight, but definitely on our next episode as well. Pablo Lopez is the only pitcher in baseball with a 15% swinging strike on four different pitches, which is just extremely, extremely hard to do. There was a pitch mix change. He joined the sweeper revolution last season, Lopez throwing it 21% of the time, and it was probably his best pitch outside of the four-seamer. And we're another year removed from the early career shoulder issues that we saw from Pablo Lopez. He was very fragile early in his career, but has thrown 180 and 194 innings over the last two seasons, which is 11th most in baseball. So kind of in the back of my mind, I could see like the shoulder creeping back up somehow, but it hasn't the last two seasons. Everything else tells me this is an absolute ace. So yes, I have a lot of Pablo Lopez, and despite the 35 ADP, which is pretty damn high price, I'm taking him because also I think he's the last SP, true SP one in the pool. And I'm actually excluding George Kirby from that. I think you've got Strider, Cole, Wheeler, Burns, Gossman, Castillo, and Lopez. That's my crew.
All right. Well, we'll approach that some more later on in the show, because we have a couple listener questions talking about our kind of tier at SP1 on that. But yeah, I love Lopez. I've been drafting him either on NFBC or Underdog. Underdog, I like him a lot. There's a lot to like there in that format. But yeah, I'm on board with Pablo. You got me. You sold me last time, so I'm with you now. So if he fails, I will obviously not say anything about it.
Yeah, if he fails, man, if he fails, I fail.
All right,
Pablo fails. We're not shutting this thing down, but it's
we need RotoWare to make vote for Pablo shirts. That would be fun stuff. I'm just telling you, my stupidity runs wild. The ninth pitcher off the board, Zach Gallen, ADP of 41, 210 regular innings pitched last year, through like another 35 in the postseason or so. So keep that in mind, and that's a listener question we'll discuss more later as well. The ratios are great. He finished like second or third in the Cy Young this past year. Strikeouts have been good. It's just he's put up consistent production at least two straight years now, which I love to see. I guess the only concern if you really want to get picky, would be that postseason workload, if that's what you want to point to. But I kind of, grain of straw type stuff there. If that's what your final point is, he's going to be 28 this year, so not too worried about him.
Not too worried about. I just think of him more as like a mid three ZRA guy. And it's funny kind of saying that and seeing a mid three ZRA projection for like everyone ahead of him, which again, I talked about projections for pitchers at the top. Not sure I'm buying that. I think Gallen's just fine. I don't think there's another level here though. Like I feel like he's more of an SP2 and if you're looking at the pitcher pool at a higher level, I just think he's a pretty far step back from the other guys we've talked about. And I do think there are a couple other starting pitchers, again, just my personal preference, that I would take later that are going behind Zach Gallen. So probably not ending up with him, knowing that's, I think, a pretty safe floor. I just don't know the ceiling with Gallen. I worry a little bit about the strikeouts. He's projected for 192 here by ATC. The swinging strike was just 11.2%, which is below average. And I use swinging strike all the time to kind of check that against strikeout rate. So I don't know. Mid-three ZRA guy with like an okay K rate doesn't scream like anchor to me.
Yeah, he's done well for me in the past. There are other guys I might be interested in as well. It does start to get bleaker because I do believe innings and strikeouts, Gallen still will produce quite a bit. But
Speaking of innings or lack of innings, let me play host for just a second and introduce your boy, Tyler Made of Glass Now, ADP 41. God. What do we have on Glass Now, Bubba?
120 innings pitched last year. That's like a career high. That's a career high. That's good. So we're going to be good for like 150, 160 this year, which when you look at his strikeout stuff, it's Strider-esque. Which we'll go with that, or Freddy Peralta-esque, if you want to. 33% K rate last year. He's been over 30% K rate all the way since 2019. K to walk is outstanding. The ratios are electric, 106, 0.9, 0.93, 113, 0.89. The guy is great when he's on the mound. No one can argue that. The question, like you're hinting at, is when will he be on the mound? I'm going with he's healthy right now. He's in L.A. They're talking about doing the six-man rotation until that fails, of course. But I like Glasnow. I think, obviously, if he stays healthy, this guy does not deserve to be the 10th pitcher off the board. He's much higher than that. It's just a risk. Are you willing to take it?
Yep. Yep. I do think the six-man rotation is somewhat important in weekly leagues, where you're just not going to get many two-start weeks from Tyler Glasnow. And I think LA, like, it is a good sign that the Dodgers not only traded for Glasnow, and I don't know if did this happen when we did our top 20? Did that Glasnow trade happen?
I don't think so.
Or was he still on the Rays?
I think he was still on the Rays because we did that pretty early. That was like a late November, pretty early December.
We'll just assume it was before because, neither of us remember. So I think the trade to LA is a net positive because not only, I mean, I appeal to authority, trust the LA organization. Not only did they trade for him, they did ink Tyler Glasnow to a 5-year, whatever, hundreds of millions of dollars.
Deferred for the next 40 years, probably. So, yeah.
There's the Giants fan coming out. Mm-hmm. Coming out. I think that shows faith from a smart organization that Glasnow, at least long-term, can hold up. I do wonder, like, innings-wise, even if Glasnow stays healthy, is LA really going to push him that far, like, in the second half? Best case. Again, if Glasnow is pitching in the second half, which he, you know, hasn't been able to make it through a full season. So, I'll give you Tyler Glasnow is probably a top five pitcher, even if he goes like 160, 170 innings. Just think the chances of that is really small, and he's going at a price. He's the 10th starter off the board where that's your SP1. And I don't feel good about that.
My question for you. This time last year, we were sitting there talking about Jacob DeGrom, and I know DeGrom has been outstanding. We kept saying, if he can throw 140, 150 innings, is he worth X? Glasnow's not far off that type of production that DeGrom was showing. Like, ratios maybe, but strikeout stuff, pretty darn similar. I think we can agree upon at least pretty close to that. So why, if we're saying 150 innings of Glasnow, why do you need 170?
Because I don't think Glasnow is as good as DeGrom. I thought Peak DeGrom was like...
No, Peak DeGrom was a different level. He was Strider.
He's better than Strider.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, so if we're saying 140 innings of DeGrom, so you want 160 or 170 of Glasnow to kind of get that same bump?
Yeah. Yeah, so I've got... So I do my own pitcher projections. I've got Glasnow projected for 320 ERA, 110 whip, 33% K rate, and, well, I should update that. 10 wins, I'll give him, like, 13 going to LA.
Yeah.
He needs 100 and, again, this is just my projections, like, it's probably terrible, but he needs 140 innings to return his value in terms of ranking above starting of other starting pitchers. If I give Glasnow 160 and maybe I'll give him another win, he's the number 3 starting pitcher.
There we go. So I'll take my chances
at 160.
That he's a 12-team play. 15, I would not feel comfortable with it. 12-team, you can dance because he could be your SP2 in a 12-team, depending on how you want to draft.
Yep, I agree.
And there's room, even if you take him at 1, there's some names coming up here that you can easily piggyback real quick and in a 12 feel a lot better about.
Maybe so. We add Glasnow to the bet board, but I don't know what it would be. I don't want to do innings because then, like, I'm cheering for him to get hurt, and that's really
that's bad karma. That's when Pablo Lopez goes down and karma for you right there.
We'll think of something around him.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to say it out loud now, but we'll see things and figure it out from there. All right, let's stick with the Dodgers. ADP of 44, the 11th pitcher off the board. We when this happened, the Yamamoto sighting took place the night we did our top 20. I remember that very clearly because we changed our rankings at the last minute.
That's right. Yeah.
I think we both had him around like 12 or 13, maybe 15 at the lowest, something in that range. He's coming in at 11 right now, folks. And, people love Yamamoto. The projections are pretty fair on Yamamoto. I have 0 shares of Yamamoto. Like, I'd rather gamble on Glasnow than Yamamoto.
Yeah, and I apologize to the listeners who want some type of, like, detailed, good Yamamoto analysis. I don't know enough. Like, yeah. Yes, you can read some scouting reports and see his stats overseas and that sort of thing. It's just, for me, it's an unknown commodity, and I don't like drafting unknown commodities in the top 45, top 80. Picks. And so, you know, I've mentioned this plenty of times, but this may be a blind spot in our games where we're not willing to, I don't want to say take a risk, but make those type of picks early in rounds, because we could very well miss out based on what we're hearing and based on the team context and all that stuff. We could very well miss out on a great year, but like, I don't know. It's not a pick I'm making in the top for my SP1, SP2. I need to know more and see more about some of these guys. So
100% with you. It's how I feel about the next guy, Tariq Skubal, ADP of 49. No one can deny how amazing he was when he came back last year. 80 innings, 280 ERAs, xFIP 2.56. Strikeouts were just pure insanity. 33% K rate, 4.5% walk to top it off for 28.4% K to walk. He was great, like on every aspect of the game. Great. People have talked about his cookie cutter schedule he had, but he still dealt. Like I say, yes, there is something to the schedule, but in the end, the guy was filthy. He was dominating. Like, regardless of the schedule, he was still pretty damn good. But for me, like, if we're going to pick on Glass now, why are we not picking on Skubal? And some people are just completely ignoring that, and they're all in on Tariq Skubal. So that I have concerns on Skubal still, too. And I think he's great. I just rather take Glass now 8 picks earlier if I'm going to pick between the two.
Yeah, it would. And I'm not saying people are doing that out there. It would be interesting to be down on Glass now, but high on Skubal. I guess, I don't know.
And maybe they're not, but I just hear so much more Skubal talk.
They are kind of in the same. I feel like they are of the same ilk. And so anyone listening can probably predict what I'm going to say about Tariq Skubal, and that I'm not going to draft the guy.
On to the next guy.
I need to see more than a half season. That said, so we have a good mutual friend, Carlos Marcano, who was just nominated as a finalist, I believe, for writer at baseball, writer of the year, and article of the year.
He's deservedly so. Recent years too. He crushes. Yep.
He has a system called Specs. That's and amazing. If you're interested in it, just DM me. I don't have the link handy, but it's basically, like, to put it very, very quickly, it's strikeout minus walk, like on steroids.
Yeah, it's awesome.
It's a single number that uses pitcher skills and puts it in a number. Obviously much more complex than that. But again, if you're interested, let me know. Tariq Skubal got a perfect spec score is 100. Tariq Skubal got a perfect 100 along with Spencer Strider. So, like, even though I'm saying I'm out on Skubal, the ceiling is Glasnow-esque. Without as much injury risk. So, like, I get it.
Wait. How can you say without as much injury risk?
Because he finished the season healthy.
Okay.
And he dealt in the second half.
That's fair. Okay. You're right. Can't argue that. That's fair.
Maybe that's not a thing, but that's my Zach Allen rule.
He threw 80 in the second half. So if you could just duplicate that, we're talking 150, 160 maybe. And that could be like, there's your bet, Glasnow versus Skubal, possibly. Like, that could be interesting. Not that you want to side on that, but that'd be an interesting end of season discussion point between those two.
And they're 8 picks apart, so
yeah, it's a pretty fair window. But yeah, if anybody wants to specs, I usually have Carlos on in the preseason to talk about his updated rankings on that. It's amazing stuff. It's really, really good, and really good for in season stuff as well, especially in the relief pitching department. So check it out. All right, Aaron Nola, the conundrum, the yearly conundrum. Like, this, it's almost like you can just listen to last year's preview and then the year before that's preview, and we probably have the same conversation about Aaron Nola time and time again. ADP at 53 right now. Last year was an odd year, so we had the bad Aaron Nola. That's the lazy analysis. But 4.46 ERA after 3.25, then 4.63, then 3.28, and so on and so forth. But what Nola does is he throws innings. 193 again, after 205, after 180, after 202, after 212. That's what he does. And he strikes out a ton of dudes. And unlike Lance Lynn, he doesn't get destroyed all the time. So I'm still a huge fan of Nola. I at least this year, it feels like his ADP is a little lower, so he can fit as an SP2, and that feels real, real fun, all things considered. So I don't have anything bad to say about Nola. Just know that it's a roller coaster ride of emotions. Don't watch his starts. That's the best thing I can say. Don't watch his starts.
No, and I'm shocked at what I'm about. It's like 6 months ago, me, is going to be like, what the hell are you talking about? Because I have Aaron Nola every year, everywhere, and it's tough. So everything you just said is true. Like, bad year last year, And I know I'm going to nitpick and kind of pick some stats here, but there were only 10 pitchers in baseball last year that had a 115 whip and 200 strikeouts. Aaron Nola, in a bad year, was one of those 10. I believe 8 of those other 10 are guys we've already talked about. So
pretty good. And he's 13 on this list. So
yeah. And Nola's going 13th on this list. So I understand, like, yes, the ERA, there is, and he gets pounded. Like, there's some home run issues there. But I just still feel like the volume, the strikeouts, 4 straight years, the last 4 full seasons, Aaron Nola has had 200 plus strikeouts. Hell, he had 96 strikeouts in the COVID year.
Yeah, he's legit, dude. What? I guess.
So it's just like the roller coaster of emotions and Aaron Nola-ing is a thing. Like it's there's some brutal starts in there, but we focus on ERA so much that Aaron Nola again was one of those 10 with that strikeout whip combo, and again in a year where everyone says he was terrible. I'm making the case for Aaron Nola. I totally understand why you would not draft him 49. We've got a listener question about that a little bit later, so I won't steal that thunder, but at 53 is the ADP. But I don't know. I'm a sucker, man. I think I'm probably going back in if the price is in the 4th round or 5th round for 12 teamers.
Yeah, and if you're like in a points league, really strong, because he goes quality starts. He goes the innings are huge, the strikeouts are huge. It can negate some of the roughness that takes place there with Aaron Nola. Freddie Peralta, the cover boy for this show, it feels like he just amazing. ADP of 55. The second half was one of the best second halves you've seen in baseball. Strikeouts are awesome. He was healthy. The only caveat I'll say, which could make this even better, there's a chance he's traded too. So just going to throw that out there. Like he's on the block, I would say. He's got an extra year of control, kind of like Dylan Cease does. So we'll have to see how picky the Brewers are. We saw they didn't send Burns away early for the same reason. So maybe they don't. But at this point, the Brewers like have not, like, it's why? What are we doing here? So if he gets traded, that could be really fun. But regardless, the dude's going to go out there every fifth day unless he gets hurt, and he's an absolute beast.
He is. And this is where I may be going against kind of what I just said about Glasnow and Scuba. Like, I do think there is some volume risk with Peralta, although maybe not as much. I mean, 144 innings in 2021, 78 in 2022, 165 last year.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I'd take once if he just repeated last year, did 165 again. And if we got that second half version of Freddie Peralta, which you mentioned was one of the best pitchers in baseball, his K to walk was the best. It was like 30% of any pitcher in baseball in the second half last year. And he's not just fastball Freddie anymore. Freddie Peralta does throw 4 seamers 50% of the time, but he's also got slider, changeup, and curveball that all miss bats. With a combination of some that get ground balls that he throws for strikes. Like I think the arsenal's there. Freddie Peralta just needs to kind of piece it together for an entire season. That's what we're waiting on. If that happens, Freddie Peralta is a top 10 pitcher, easy, maybe knocking on the door, top 5. So it's just funny, like him next to Aaron Nola, the dichotomy there. and then Scooble before Nola, like Nola's sandwiched between, I think, 2 of the more volatile starting pitchers out there. But I don't know. Yeah, maybe it's just weird that I'm willing to take the chance on Peralta, but not Scooble or Glasnow. I don't know.
The one grain, if I have to be somewhat negative on Peralta, the only concern I might have for him is if you look at the rest of the Milwaukee pitching staff, it is so bad that they just need Peralta to be out there as much as possible so that, like, he might be, let's throw him for one more inning thing, which we've seen with Nola. That was the Nola thing a lot. It's just true. Be prepared for those kind of scenarios.
It's like Colin Ray went an inning and a third last night. Our bullpen's gassed. Hey, Freddie, can you go 8?
It feels like there's going to be a couple of those starts where it's like, why is he going back out there? What are we doing? And there's like 4 more runs. Like, it just feels like it's coming in Milwaukee this year. But you can't really, that's just pure.
Wade Miley threw 80 pitches in 2/3 of an inning. Bullpen now.
It's a rough staff. It's a
good point.
The 15th starting pitcher off the board, an ADP of 57 right now, is
my man. Oh, it's your boy. My man. I'm at it. I'll be back in 5 minutes.
Yep. Logan Webb. This guy is amazing. 216 innings pitched last year. Got Cy Young votes this past year after 192 innings pitched the year before. Ratios have been great for the third straight season. 3.25 ERA, 2.95 xFIP last year. And he's amazing. He had a 3.16 Sierra for crying out loud. And one thing I love about him, and I said this last year on the preview show, the thing with Webb is you just look year to year, it's like a different profile almost every time he goes out there, because he's always working on things. He's always trying to mix up his pitches. He was like a heavy ground ball guy that didn't strike guys out. That was a year after he was a big-time strikeout guy. And then this last year he got back to being a strikeout guy but still got ground balls. It's amazing what happens when you're so young. He's only 27, people. Like, he's still, like, developing as a pitcher on the mound. I love Logan Webb. The dude's a bulldog. He hates getting the ball taken away from him. I've watched that a lot. The Giants don't score any runs for him, so you might not get any wins. But ratios, innings, and just because of those innings, he'll get enough strikeouts for you that, like, if you like Kirby minus the whip, this is pretty darn good right here.
Yeah. Which I think speaks to us saying Kirby might be a little overpriced, because what's the difference between Kirby and who the hell are we talking? Logan Webb. Like, there may not be much. You make a really good point, and this is a hole in my game. I see the 23% strikeout rate for Logan Webb last year, and I go, he's not that much of a strikeout guy. But when you pair it with the 216 innings that he threw, like, the actual number of strikeouts was pretty good. 60% ground ball rate guy, and I've made this point on the podcast before that once you get, so like 50%, you're an elite ground ball guy, but once you get to 55 to 60, your rate of return, for lack of a better term, gets exponentially better. And for Logan Webb to be sitting in the 60% in terms of ground ball rate, that's really good. The two downsides to Logan Webb. You mentioned one. Sorry to twist the knife on your Giants. The win potential's kind of not there. I do worry though about the strikeout. So I'm going to say the swinging strike rate for Logan Webb 2 years ago was 12.5%, a little bit better than league average. Went down to 10.6% last year, which is pretty bad. Went down even further to 9%, like, did not miss many bats. And maybe that's his approach thing. You've watched him a ton more than me. But I do worry about the lack of whiffs with Logan Webb.
I think that's why we got an uptick in innings, personally. I think he was trying to get deeper into games. Like, just watching that Giants team, it's kind of how I said with Peralta having to throw innings. Like, they needed Webb to throw 7 innings a start. Like, that was just kind of the brass tacks of it. So it kind of, like, if he needed to get strikeouts, he became a strikeout pitcher. But for the most part, use that 60% ground ball rate. That's like what it just kind of felt like watching Webb. Could be totally wrong, but the fact is he has stuff that he can get swing and miss if he needs it. Just does he utilize it enough? That's the million-dollar question. So we'll see.
Next guy's just identical to Logan Webb. Yeah, so it's interesting.
When you mentioned the Webb thing about, yeah, like, the innings give us the strikeouts, and it's like Framber Valdez is that dude too. Like, ADP of 59. We love Framber because he throws so many innings, gets a million ground balls, but he only gets the strikeouts because of the innings. He's not really a dominant strikeout guy, but we just love Framber for what he does. Had that hiccup last year, but in the end, still, I love actually the drop. I think if he didn't have that hiccup, he'd be going probably 10 to 15 picks higher. Right now, he can still get him at an ADP of 59, almost on the back end, around 5. So I like Framber. I'm still in on Framber. I think he's a great SP2. I doubt he's your SP3 if unless you're like crazy aggressive. But what's your thoughts on Framber?
I'd push back on a million ground ball. Let's say like 500,000. the ground ball rate. And this was a big thing with Framber. And actually, it does matter. Like, he was at 70% ground balls the previous two seasons, which is just nuts. And that did drop like a lot. Down to 54% last year. So I think that was somewhat of a driver between Valdez's lack of effectiveness. It's just interesting to compare him. Like, would you take Framber or Webb?
I'd take Webb. But
you're probably getting 5 more wins.
Unless you're going to get a lot more wins than Framber. The second I said that out loud, I'm like, yeah.
It's tough.
Probably the next guy.
Freb.
Yeah, I'd probably take the next guy, but out of these two, give me Framber, actually. I hate to say that. God, that sucks.
It's close. The projections are pretty much identical. 3.43 to 3.40 ERA, 1.17 to 1.20 whip.
More strikeouts.
15 strikeouts, but I mean, who knows? But
yeah, the wins is a big differentiator, probably.
Webb did finish, I mean, better than Framber, which matters too. I don't know.
Yep, we'll see.
I'm not answering the question. I just want to ask you.
That's fine. Put me on the spot. It's only fair. It's only fair. The next guy, the 17th pitcher off the board, ADP of 62, is Max Fried. Love me, Max Fried. We talked a lot about him in our top 20. I kind of started swinging Ryan in the right direction on this one, it felt like, at that time. We'll see where he stands tonight. But he was injured a lot last year, still ended up with 77 innings, and he finished very strong, is what I like to see. Overall, the ratios were good. But if you look at you look what we got from Mr. Fried, his second half stats were pretty much, you know, the 51 innings he threw in the second half, 2.79 ERA, which is still very, very good. And when you go deeper into these first half, second half stats, 20, almost over 26% K rate, 20.7% K to walk. I love me some Max Fried, and I continue to. I don't care if he's a heavy fly ball guy. That's how he's been his whole career. That's who he is. Give me Max Fried.
He's pretty big ground ball guy.
Well, that shifted 50, because it felt like that was not the case before.
Yeah, last year he had 58% ground ball. Well, let me double check.
Yeah, now you got me checking it while you're talking. Because I used to be
58% ground ball last year. Yeah, which is
That was a big improvement. Yeah. Okay.
Which is actually good. More than Framber, which is kind of crazy.
But he also had one of his highest home run to fly balls last year. That's crazy too.
Yeah. But when you only have like a 25% fly ball rate, doesn't really matter that much.
Yeah, that's very true.
I'm conflicted. I'm still conflicted. Like, I think I feel like Max Fried's like 25 years old, but he's 30. He's a lot older than, and maybe that's just me. Like, I still think of him as like a prospect, but obviously he's not. And I do think we are giving him a pass for that forearm injury last year. But again, I can't sit here and say I'm worried about Max Fried when I'm talking about how other guys finished the season strong, because you laid out the case very well, second half Fried. So I get the Max Fried pick. However, I like Grayson Rodriguez, who we're going to talk about next, and Logan Gilbert more than Max Fried. So I'm probably not grabbing Fried in drafts, but I totally get the point. And there is, I don't think you mentioned the team context, but should get a ton of wins.
Run support will be aplenty. Yeah, plenty so. In Atlanta. Next up is Grayson Rodriguez, ADP of 64. And I'm kind of with you. As much as I like Fried, like we talk about safety picks, well, we're kind of out of the safety range in my mind. We start talking SP2 guys. Grayson Rodriguez ceiling's through the roof, it feels like. We talked in depth about his second half success when he made his pitch mix changes. And I think we even said on that show, if he were to do that for if we saw more of that guy for a full season, he's one of your dark horse Cy Young guys. We were talking about it. It was a listener question on that show. So I'm with you on Grayson. I'm a big, big fan of what we saw from Grayson Rodriguez.
Yeah, and I get annoyed sometimes, and I say it all the time. It's like, oh, yeah, if he does this second half for the full season. I mean, I just said it with Freddie Peralta. Yeah. But with Grayson, like, I think it's reasonable to believe that, given the youth, given the prospect pedigree, and given the, like, sheer transformation that we saw from Grayson. It wasn't just like Grayson was in the majors all of last year and ran hot in the second half. He got sent down, came back with more velocity, ton more whiffs, better control. And I mean that park, the run support, like, I do think it's fair to, I don't want to say expect that second half all year, because that's pretty damn lofty. But like, yeah, Grayson Rodriguez, I think the future is very bright, and I think the future is 2024 for the guy. Just the changes we saw were tangible. You could see it, and they were obviously very effective for him.
Yep, hard to disagree with that. Blake Snell, 19th off the board, ADP of 64. I unemployed Blake Snell. Thank you, Scott Boris, for that one. Cy Young season, the guy was electric. We know that. It's always been the case if he stays healthy. He's usually pretty darn good, especially in the strikeout departments. Still walked a ton of guys, but I think it's been well-documented and talked about on a lot of shows. I know my show's talked about it with different people. He misses almost on purpose. That's the way he pitches. So it's not just like he's wild or something. It's kind of his blueprint. But I don't know where he's going, and the idea of him throwing a Cy Young season back-to-back is not likely. So I haven't gotten as much shares as I thought I would.
So Blake Snell previously won the Cy Young in 2018.
Yep.
Want to guess what he did the year after?
Well, he probably got hurt or just completely crapped the bed.
Yep. 107 innings of a 4.29 ERA, 1.27 WHIP. Yep. Pretty bad. He's just too volatile for me. And I get the, like, yes, he's that, you know, that's his approach. He can kind of do what he wants. He's walking people on purpose because he doesn't want to give in. I kind of buy that, but like, why didn't, what, where was that in 2019 and 2021? That also backfired
tremendously.
Exactly. Like that approach can backfire if your command is off at all. And that can come and go. And so like, there are a ton of reasons to like Blake Snell. He doesn't even need to touch what he did last year and return value here. The K's, like that ATC projection, 192 strikeouts. I'd take the heavy over on that. Like the K's are great, but I don't know. I just see a bunch of, or a few 4+ ERA seasons with like less than 130 innings. And I don't know. There's some downside. Very interested to see what, not just where he goes, but what his contract looks like.
That'll be a very deciding factor, and we could see his ADP change when that takes place as well, potentially.
Yep.
The last guy we'll talk about tonight with the 20th pitcher off the board, the second Seattle Mariner off the board here, Logan Gilbert, ADP of 65. Gilbert, when I dug in on him recently, I was just shocked. 190 innings after 185 last year, you know, 3.73 ERA. The biggest thing that kind of always rubs me weird is that he just doesn't rack up as many Ks as you'd expect, potentially. They're still good because he throws so many innings. Don't get me wrong. 189 Ks last year, 174 the year before. Very good. It just feels like when I think Logan Gilbert, I'm thinking it's like elite, like just dominating strikeout guy. That is not him. He's still very good. But and he could make another step. Like, he's still so young. The fact he's shown the innings durability in two straight years, I'm a big fan of that. So I've been growing more on the Logan Gilbert side. We'll talk about it next episode too. I'm growing more into this whole like Mariners staff. It's ridiculous. So yeah, give me some Logan Gilbert.
Yeah. I like Logan Gilbert more than Blake Snell, more than Grayson, more than Max Fried, more than Valdez, more than Webb, more than Scooble. Taking him over Yamamoto. I'm taking him over Glass now.
Somebody there, Ryan. You skipped somebody. What about
Paul? Yeah, no, I didn't say Freddie. Can't go against my man. Logan Gilbert, like, so you covered it well. This is all built on a foundation of an innings floor. So the innings is very impressive to me. Logan Gilbert, you mentioned the K's. I think there's quite a bit of strikeout upside with Logan Gilbert. He had, let's see, in the forecast, we gave him an upside of 215 Ks. This swinging strike rate went up last year by a point and a half almost. He added a new splitter, threw it 15% of the time, and it missed bats at a 20% clip. And he's throwing his four-seam fastball fewer and fewer in each of his 3 years that he's been in the majors. So I just think Logan Gilbert, and yeah, he's still 27. Like, I still think this is, you know, I still think there's another level here for Logan Gilbert. And even if there's not, you get what we got last year, which if I look up in the player rater, Logan Gilbert on per the Razzball player rater was the number 17 pitcher overall last year. And again, I don't know how that valuation works, but like, even if he just repeats what he did last year, Gilbert's good. And again, given the uptick in whiffs, given the splitter, given what Seattle's doing, I think there's a top 10 ceiling here, and I don't, not even like ceiling, but like upper three quarters of the room.
I might have misheard you in your list of people you take over. Would you take him over Kirby?
I'd take Kirby over Gilbert.
Okay. Curious. Last year they're going side by side. That's why it's a fun little differentiation.
But they're not that different, man. Well, for an ADP gap of 34 to 65?
Yeah, that's my point. That's
at price, I'd take Gilbert.
There you go. There it is. Okay, perfect.
I like him, obviously.
All right, 20 pitchers in the books. We'll continue on this list on Thursday, but we got a bunch of listener questions, which you absolutely crushed everybody. So we're going to get these ones and knock them all out for you as usual. And we'll start with our buddy, Ben Tidd. Since no one seems to be interested in starting pitching, wink, I'd curious to know who's the last starter you'd be comfortable with as your SP one.
Oh yeah, I spoiled this one earlier, didn't I? I would say Pablo Lopez at 35 ADP, and he's the eighth pitcher off the board. So I'd say there's seven SP ones because I'm not including Kirby in that discussion. Seven SP ones for me, and I absolutely want to grab one if I can.
I definitely want to get one. I'd be willing to throw Gallen into the mix just because I trust the innings floor, which I want from an ace. That's where I factor that in. So it's more like 7.5, I'll say. Do I love the idea of having Gallen? No. But if I have to, I can live with Gallen as my SP1. So that's kind of where I land there. And I'm with you on Kirby. The more we talk about him, it's just I believe the talent. I believe he's better than the way Sandy was in years past, but just I hate accumulators as my ace. I hate it. And that feels like what he has to do to be super successful. Thomas Travato asks, how do we make sure to pick the right pitcher where we do side-by-sides at the end of the year? He did that tongue-in-cheek, by the way, because that was a discussion we did the review last time. It was like, this guy. And it was like, if you picked the wrong guy, you were screwed.
But but just real quick, so we talked about Wheeler, Burns, Gausman, Castillo, Kirby, Lopez, all going within 10 picks. They're not all going to be that good.
At least half of them probably screw it up.
To go back to this conversation last year, it was like Max Scherzer. It was Brandon Woodruff. Your fantasy season will depend on whether you pick the right pitcher or not in that group. Or will highly depend on that. You can get past it.
I think we mentioned it last episode. I told you about it. I did that 5-part series on ADP.
Yeah.
Go back and read rounds 3, 4, and 5. That's where a lot of those guys are going right there. Go see how many bust. Bieber, Scherzer.
Bieber, yes.
Julio Urias. There were so many of them in those rounds that busted, like so many more busted than actually came through in those rounds. It was disgusting to write. Like, just it made you go back and think that as much as we think we know what we're talking about, it's literally you're just hoping and praying, folks.
That's agreed. Wild. Well said.
The next one we got here, Thomas, where did I put it?
Yeah, he had an actual question, I think, after that.
I think I deleted it. I'll look it up here in a minute and find him one. I know he did. First World Problem says, which currently healthy pitcher going outside the top 80 has the best chance to be drafted in the top 30 next year? I'm guessing top 80 ADP or top 80 SP?
Probably top 80 SP.
Okay, so let me pull.
Because the board that I tweeted was the top 30 SP.
Okay, very good.
That's a tough one. I don't have the. I got to pull up.
I just pull up my ADP. So top 80. Lazaro is my dude. I'll say it right now. He's right at 80 right now.
Lizardo?
Yeah.
No. 80 SP. 80 SP. Oh. That's like Evaldi, Savali.
Fox. Well, he's outside. He's just around top 30. Never mind. I was using ADP. I'm an idiot. Top 30.
I'll go. I'll go Brandon Pfaadt or that's Nick just who Lodolo. I was looking at.
Yeah, Brandon Pfaadt would be like, I've been taking him in a lot of drafts. Like, that's the guy I literally look at him, and then Bryce Miller would be another guy. That Brian Rue, Bryce Miller. I'd be willing to say one of the two of them finds their way in the top 30 next year.
Notice I'm not saying Christopher Sanchez, who is my favorite. I think Lodolo has a higher ceiling. So if that's the question to get into the top 30. I'll go Lodolo.
That is your boy. All right. Next one here. Dish 12 says, using each 5-pitcher block as a tier, which pitchers do you guys think finished the year in the tier above? Which pitchers finished in the tier below?
Okay. So our SP 5 to 10 tier, I got to say Pablo Lopez. So number 7 pitcher off the board. I think he goes top 5. What about who goes from 3rd to 2nd on your end?
3rd tier to the 2nd, I'd be willing to say Freddy Peralta.
Agreed.
What about you in tier 4?
Logan Gilbert. We'll go. He's the 20th off the board. I think he's a top 15 starter.
I like tier 5 quite a bit, actually. I know we didn't talk about him, but I'll throw it out there for him since we have the board up. I'll go Lizardo just because I'm biased, but I like a few guys in that tier.
Yeah, we'll dive into that group next.
What about episode? Tier 6?
Tier 6, kind of. Who's that last dude? Who's SP
30? Dylan Cease. That ain't the guy jumping.
Don't make me throw up in my mouth. I guess I'll say Justin Steele, but
yeah, I go Bybee.
We'll have a disagreement.
We got a listener question. I look forward to that. We got a listener question on Bobby, so we'll talk about him. Who's going backwards from tier one to tier two? Burns. He asked about both.
Burns back from one to two.
That's fair. From two to three, I will say I'm going to say George Kirby.
Yep. And again, these are five pitcher groupings. So when we say two to three, it's 5 to 10 down to 10 to 15. The next group, I'll go Skubal down a couple tiers.
That's fair. The next tier, I will say Blake Snell. That's pretty much easy for me.
We'll drop out of the top 20.
Yep. Gotcha. What do you have from 21 to 25 going backwards?
Ooh.
It's a tough one.
None of the above?
Yeah.
Kode Senga? I'll say Senga, I guess.
Great tier, it's man. Tough. That's a fun tier. If you could double tap the tier, it's going to be a fun way to start next week. 26 to 30, I'm Dylan Cease. That's just lazy, but that's what I'll take. Yeah, we'll leave it at that on that one. Good question. Dish, I found Thomas Travato's other question. I guess I should post a legit question. What pitchers are the riskiest profiles in your top 20 and why?
Made of glass now.
Yeah, I literally was silent to hear you say it. It's pretty much a glass now, Skubal. Just guys that throw the innings to me. Peralta, because we've seen it, but have we seen it enough?
Yep.
Snell, similar. Like just those guys that have not shown the consistency for innings for me in top 20.
I think there's also just one thing since we just kind of repeat ourselves, you could look at age as well. There are a couple older pitchers, like Wheeler.
Especially early.
Yep.
Cole Wheeler.
Yep.
Gossman's early 30s. Castillo's like 33. Like they're not old, but they're getting up there in age. Simon P says, pitcher with best chance to shoot up to the top five and one to fall down out of your top 30. So out of this list, who's your best option to get into the top five?
Just to mix it up a little bit, just going for pure ceiling, I'll go Grayson Rodriguez could be a top five pitcher. Yeah,
you just said Logan 64. Gilbert could be number three, and he went Grayson Rodriguez.
So I think Grayson has a higher. here's my defense. Your ass trying to call me out. I think Grayson's got a higher ceiling. I think Logan has a better chance of getting to a somewhat lower ceiling. If that makes sense.
That's fair. Top five. If all goes well, I can't use Lizardo for everything. I don't think he's top five viable.
Especially because we didn't really even talk about
him. I'll go Freddy Peralta. There we go. If he were to throw 170 innings, I think he's top five viable. Who is one of these in that falls out of the top 30?
That's a good question. I'll stick to the top 20 that we mentioned. Yeah. I'll actually say either Framber or Webb.
That's fair, because if they struggle at all,
they don't have the Ks to fall back on. And yeah, I'll go Framber or Webb. I'll at least realize a potentially lower floor with those two guys.
I'll say Blake Snow. Blake Snow.
Yeah.
Regression monster coming. BP at Futures Bet says, will Tanner Bibee be on the left side of this graphic next year? I believe he will be.
I believe he won't be, and
we'll save that for the next episode.
Save that for next week.
Yes, that'll be
Thursday.
Thursday's episode. That will be a doozy. A couple more questions for you here. Colin, my shocked. He says, number one, he's got two questions. One, between regular season and postseason, Gallen threw 243 innings. Is this a concern for you guys at all when considering him? A slight concern, but I'm trying to look past it. But it is worth noting.
It's worth noting because that's a big number, especially in today's game.
Yep.
I don't know. Like I said at the top, trying to predict pitcher injuries, it's like good luck.
Yeah. His second question was, Eno wrote that Nola's last three fantasy finishes among starting pitchers are 58th, 18th, 51st. Should he be going in the SP30-ish range closer to Eflin and Cease instead of the top 15? No, just because the ceiling is much different than those two, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I don't want to get into like a valuation thing. I mean, Colin knows more about valuations than I do. I'm not sure how Aaron Nola finished 58th last year. Like, so I mentioned the K's and the whip, and he's had 12 wins. That seems 58 seems pretty low. I just looked at the Razzball player rater for last year, and Aaron Nola was 39th. So again, I don't know. But I just I think Aaron Nola's fine at the price. If you believe the Raz Ball thing and he's 39th and coming off a bad year, if you think that's his floor, Aaron Nola's the 13th pitcher off the board. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, there's upside. There's more upside with him than those other guys we mentioned, in my opinion. But we might be biased when it comes to
Nola. Yeah, like I could very well be completely wrong on it. And anyone who like drafts Aaron Nola because of me, like I will not give you my home address.
Slide into my DMs.
Don't blame me.
Yeah. Michael Cicchini says, "What is your cutoff point for taking your SP1? It's been Pablo for me, but I just took Wheeler over Alonso in round two and regret it. Or for example, the past results and projections for Gilbert and Kirby are close. We just hit on those." So, yeah, you got a good idea on that. And then two more questions. Corbin Young says, "Why should we draft all the Mariners? Because they're awesome."
Agreed.
Yeah, we already drooled over two, and like I already mentioned Wu and Bryce Miller, I'm a big fan of. So we'll get to those guys in the coming weeks.
There was, so I did put out that top 10 whiff rate on the four seamers tweet that I was talking about earlier. Six of those top 10 were Seattle and Minnesota. Like there is a thing, like I think you say, what's in the water, whatever. Some like joke, but there's a philosophy and an organizational thing going on there.
Josh Maurice says, "Would you trade Mick Abel, Colton Cowser, and Jacob Reimer for Musgrove in head-to-head points dynasty? Not sure if Musgrove's arm issues from last year carry over, and if he holds up to 180 innings pitched for three or four more years." I'm not a prospect guy, but if you want to win now, you take Musgrove. That's all I'm going to say.
I don't want to answer and give like wrong info because I don't know enough about those guys. I always kind of direct prospect questions to our friends Chris Clegg and Eric Cross. Yeah. So if you want to, and they're always very willing to help. So if you want to ask that over there, I just don't know enough about the prospects.
And one last question in the chat from our buddy Gialdi, Kansas City Moose. "Do you believe in Cole Reagan?" Surprisingly, not a top 30 ADP pitcher. That really shocks me, actually.
And actually, I hope I didn't mess something up. No, I don't think he is top 30.
I don't think you did. I'm looking right now.
He's 50. 80,
yeah, he's in the 50s. And you take out he's probably like a 40 something ish pitcher right outside it. Yeah, that's crazy. I thought he'd be going a lot higher.
So, I mean, given the price, I thought I did too. I thought the price would be higher. So, given that Cole Reagan's is like your SP three or maybe four in a 12 team league, I'd take a gamble there. I called him five walk Reagan's at the end of last year multiple times. I do worry about the second half walk rate. Like, it's very hard to have an 11% walk rate in a 2.78 ERA, 1.14 whip. So like for as good as Cole Reagan's was in the second half last year, like, he walked a lot of dudes.
You know who he reminds me of? You know what that reminds me of?
Blake Snell?
Yes.
Yeah.
There's a lot of similarities there.
Tons of whiffs. Tons of Ks.
At his ADP, now he's your SP 3 or 4. I'm very interested, actually. I think when we had this discussion at the end of last season on the review of the starting pitchers, or even before that, I think the speculation was he'd be like going to the top like 20-25.
Or like SP. Around Scooble, maybe? Like,
yeah.
There was like kind of a similar discourse between those two. And maybe looking at the numbers now, Scooble was better, but like there's a huge difference between those two guys.
Yeah, that's a big draft difference. So like if you wanted to tell me right now, I'll take Cole Reagan's at his price over Scooble all day long.
Yes, agreed.
Yep. Yeah. So that'll be a fun one to also look back on when the season ends. But
Charlie says, "Well, he's all we got." What do you mean? You Royals
got,
fan?
You got Seth Lugo and Michael Wacha and Brady Singer. Like, come on, Gialdi. Hey,
and maybe Chris Bubich will come sweeping back in the second half of the year.
And when you're contending, because you assigned Bobby Witt to a lifetime contract, you guys can trade for awesome. Another starting pitching. Oh yeah, I'm pumped that they did it.
This, but yeah.
That's like four or five teams now that have locked up their studs. Like, this is what we need more of in baseball. Heck, people hate the Astros. They just locked up Altuve. It's basically a lifetime Astro. You got Corbin Carroll's locked up. J-Rod's locked up. Witt's locked up. Like, all these, like, God, that's great for
baseball. Cunha's locked up at a relatively cheap price compared to everyone else.
That's just a great, great situation there. So, pretty. And then you have the Braves who just have everybody locked up. So, you got that going for them, too. All right. On that note, we will wrap things up. SP part one. We got 1 through 20, kind of as expected on this one. We'll go through probably 21 through 40. We'll try to go to 50, but it'll probably be 21 through 40 next week, and then or on Thursday. And then on Tuesday, we'll wrap it up for you. Hopefully, this was helpful for you, the discussions we had along with strategy and whatnot. But final thoughts on tonight's episode, Mr. Bloomfield.
No, just avoided making a really bad joke, so I'm proud of myself.
Yeah, you did good. I bit my tongue quite a bit. I'll save them for as we get farther down the board, and I'm really looking forward to the Tanner Bibee thing now because I did not know you didn't like him that much, so this will be fun. I'm looking forward to that quite a bit, and you'll have to tune in. It's called a teaser, folks, on Thursday to get that from us because that'll be the second tier of five we discuss. It'll be early in the show. But until then, you can check out Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod. I am at BD Entrick. This was Bubba the Bloom, episode 105. Catch you all later.